So we had the pleasure to speak with Bill Holter yesterday for a few hours. He was kind enough to come over to the house and spend some time with us. We had dinner with Bill this evening. We're back at the house. Thought we'd shoot this video. I have a few questions for Bill. Aaron has questions. Matt has questions. And Bill, I don't think you need an introduction, so we'll just get right into the interview here. My question, I'm going to start with this, is where are we, the United States of America, right now, as far as what's happening in this country socially, economically? How far are we into this right now?
Yeah, well, first off, it's not just the United States of America, it's the world. And my opinion is there's one or two outs in the ninth inning. This is pretty much about it. This is coming to a boil from so many different angles. And one pot boils over, they all boil over.
Okay, Matt.
Bill, I know you're a big, number one, it's really been great to meet you the last couple of days and have a nice steak tonight. Question about the metals. I know you're, I'm a big fan of 90% silver. I know you've been a proponent for many years of 90% or junk silver. Can you tell us what, from your perspective, what the benefits are of 90% silver?
Yeah, I've tried to recommend to clients over the last at least 5 or 6 years that junk is the best form of silver for an American to own. I mean, if you're in Canada or Europe, it's a different story. But in the U.S., dimes and quarters, they're not counterfeitable. I mean, who's going to counterfeit a silver dime? They're readily recognizable as long as they have a date of 64 or earlier. You know they're real. You can drop them on the counter. You can tell that they're real. And they are the smallest denomination. And when things go bad, we're going to go to a barter system for 2 weeks, 2 months, God forbid 6 months or more. But for barter, dimes and quarters, because they're the smallest unit, that's the best form.
Bill, in regards to the metals, now there will be people, again, not judging, not criticizing. There are people out there that don't know any better. There are people out there that just don't want to ask these type of questions. And some people just want to troll. But there are people out there that will say, you can't eat gold, you can't eat silver. What do you say to that?
First off, I'd say you're right. If you want to eat gold or silver, you're an idiot. But you can buy food with gold or silver. People will say that no one's going to sell food for gold and silver. There are people that have ranches. There are people that have farms. There are people that produce way more food than they can consume, and they'll sell it. And if you have metal, they'll accept it. I mean, go to a farmer's market. Talk to the local farmers and ask them, when the shit house comes down, will you take silver? Will you take gold? 90% of the time, you'll hear from a farmer, yes, of course.
And Bill, correct me if I'm wrong. Maybe I'm not sharp on my history right now, but has there ever been a time in world history where you couldn't take an ounce of gold or an ounce of silver and convert it into a fiat currency? And take that fiat currency and go buy food if you had to buy food.
Right, you've always been able to convert. I mean, gold and silver have been money for 5,000 years. You'll always be able to convert gold or silver into fiat, but there's going to be a point in time where nobody's going to convert because nobody will want to accept any fiat. And at that point, gold and silver will go into hiding, except for real goods.
Okay, Aaron.
All right, Bill, I just want to appreciate you for coming by and speaking to us. It's been an honor
My
to
pleasure.
meet you. And my question is, JB is constantly crucified on his channel about a lot of the stuff he talks about is doom and gloom. So what do you say to these people?
If you can't, what is it, the Jack Nicholson line? You can't handle the truth. I mean, you're telling the truth. Things are not normal, we'll put it that way. And what comes is going to be really bad. We're from a whether it be a political, geopolitical, societal, financial, from any standpoint you want to look at, the world is no longer normal. This is not what we grew up with. This is not, I mean, the country, from a U.S. centric standpoint, the country is not following the Constitution. This is a really big crossroads point in time. So
So there's
I would just say anybody who's trolling you, they're an idiot. I mean, don't listen to them.
I agree. But
now you pissed off the trolls.
They keep watching. They're some of my most loyal exactly. listeners. So thank you. Even if you are a troll, we love you. Storing medals. A lot of people will ask the question, storing medals, where should I put my gold? Where should I put my silver? Where is the safest place, Bill?
You don't want to store it all in one place. If you want to use private non-bank vaults, do two of them, do three of them. Diversify your location. You do want to have some on hand. Don't keep it all on hand in one place at your home. You might want to have two, three separate safes. You might want to dig a hole. You definitely do not want to put anything into a safe deposit box, because when this goes down, you will not have access to it. And if you do ever get access to the box, there's a 90%+ probability that it will be empty when you get there.
Matt?
Well, I just got back from about a two-week vacation last month from Costa Rica. And I understand, I've been following you for a lot of years, I understand for several years you actually moved to Costa Rica. And I was wondering what you think about, you know, when things start to get really bad, people's process about contemplating moving to an alternative country or a foreign country to try to escape what's going to be coming. What are your thoughts on that, given that you have a perspective there?
Right. Yeah, that was my thought process back in late 2006. I knew what was coming. I wanted to get out of the way. Lived in Costa Rica for close to 5 years. My Spanish got good enough to understand that they truly don't like gringos. They'll smile at you. They'll accept your money. They like the money that you're spending. But when push comes to shove, you're a gringo. You're not one of them. You don't look like them. You don't talk like them. And they know it. I mean, my Spanish is good. I have a gringo accent, but they know I'm not, I'm not one of them. Even if you're just living off of Social Security and you have no wealth whatsoever, they're going to view you as wealthy, as rich. And when the system comes down, gringos are going to be targets. They will be the absolute number one first targets that are gone after, because they're rich and they're not one of us. That's the thought process. Mm-hmm. So my decision was to come back, live in Texas, fight this thing shoulder to shoulder with people that are like-minded. All I can say is I don't believe there's any place on the planet that you can actually hide.
So, Bill, I think we've created a lot of enemies now because of the inflation we've caused.
That too.
And the weaponization of the U.S. dollar. You want to elaborate?
Yeah. That's the other thing, is that when this thing goes down, it will at some point be understood that it was caused by and the fault of the United States. So there's going to be anger against Americans, probably in Costa Rica. I told you there's a lot of Canadians who live down there. There will be anger against North Americans because they caused the financial problems, and people in Central America, South America, wouldn't be living those problems if it was not for the abuse of the fiat dollar.
Got it. Aaron?
All right. So, Bill, I know you've used the term Mad Max on multiple shows that I've seen you on. So can you kind of define what your Mad Max scenario looks like?
Mad Max basically is where services and your daily life just don't work. Services such as you dial 911, you need police, you need fire, you need medical, and either nobody answers or you get a recording or whatever. Because when the system goes down, these people are not going to be going. I mean, you're not going to see police officers going to their job. They're going to be home protecting their own family, protecting their own home. Mad Max is it's going to be something. It will definitely be caused by a credit collapse, and the credit collapse closes the banks. Once credit collapses, nothing in your daily life that you think today is normal is going to function. So whether it be immediately, 72 hours, we talked about that, you know, your stomach, people are not going to have food for 72 hours. That's when you start getting more and more unrest. But when the unrest happens, Mad Max is, you are the law on your own property. And I mean, that's, I guess, the best way to explain it.
So as we enter this, I'm going to say no man's land, this time of uncertainty that we're speaking about, no man's land. Are we going to see a time where we have inflation and deflation playing out at the same time, where we're seeing auto prices coming down now,
right,
but oil prices are going up, insurance costs are going up. We know we're sitting on a housing collapse that's coming, a commercial real estate collapse that's already begun.
Yep.
So we're seeing that some of these assets are going to absolutely crash, while maybe certain commodities and energy is going to continue to, food going to continue to go up. Can you talk about that?
Yeah, I mean, I've talked about this for many years, is that we would have inflation and deflation at the same time. You're already seeing in commercial real estate, for instance, there was a hotel that was recently sold in San Francisco at 43 cents on 19 and in 2006's dollar. You've seen properties fall 50% from the closing prices of 2015-16. The commercial market is already in massive deflation. And you have to ask, how were those purchased to begin with? They were purchased with debt. So that's credit that's basically evaporating. That's the definition of deflation, because those dollars are disappearing. On the other hand, go to the grocery store, go to the gas station, live your daily life, and it costs way more today than it did a year ago, 3 years ago, 5 years ago, whatever. So we're already experiencing inflation at the same time of deflation. And I would say just wait a month or 2 months, 3 months, you're going to see stock markets all over the world collapsing, and you're going to have massive outright deflation. And I do want to mention one other thing. You were asking about Mad Max. 5, 6, 7 years ago, I first started talking about a Mad Max scenario. I actually did an interview. It was titled "The World is Argentina." And I guess this is for your trolls out there. How bad or how stupid or how not possible does a Mad Max scenario now look? I mean, without a question, it is a possibility.
Well, we live in California, Bill, and it's starting to look real Mad Max every day. Yes, I mean, thank you. So we're living it right now, the beginning. And I think, like, if it's this bad right now during somewhat stable times,
exactly,
what could this turn into? What could this evolve into? It's very, very concerning. And this is why I say security, security, security. But going back to what you're talking about, commercial real estate, this is something most people don't talk about. They just worry about the price of their house is going up or down,
right,
but not the price of that shopping mall or that office building that nobody's showing up to, or that hotel we spoke about in San Francisco that defaulted on $550 million. So it's every day. Another big default, another big default. The shopping mall, the Westfield Mall that we live near, defaulted. So it's now bankrupt. So this is happening everywhere. The San Francisco Westfield Mall just shut down. So this is just like traveling like wildfire everywhere. The commercial real estate market, could this really trigger a collapse? Could this really do a lot of economic damage? The regional banks, 70% of the regional banks made these loans. How damaging could this collapse be to the United States? And could this trigger a real critical, catastrophic fall?
Yeah, it absolutely can, just based on the amount of debt outstanding that's going to be wiped out. I would say, you know, rather than concentrating on just one area, like we talked about earlier, there are 100 different possibilities that one thing blows up. And I mean, I lived through the Bastrop fires. I know what a forest fire looks like. It becomes all engulfing. And that's what's going to happen in the financial markets. That's exactly what's going to happen socially. Because like we've said, these are still supposedly good times.
Mm-hmm.
and you've got people doing some, you know, really bad things. Yeah. I mean, look at the woman in San Francisco, got the crap beat out of her, and she's on the council person. Yeah. They wanted to defund the police.
Yeah.
But these are supposedly good times. What's it going to be like during bad times?
Yeah, that's what we're worried about. Matt.
Good point. Okay, I have another metals question for you, Bill. Talking about the availability of metals and the overall ability to get them, and in good times, I understand, and I know you've been asked this question many times in the last 8 or 9 months. You brokered a $25 million plus deal not too long ago for a bunch of silver and gold. And, you know, can you give us your take on that? How did that evolve? And what was your takeaway from the size of that deal, what it did to the marketplace at that time?
At the time, it was a little over a year ago. It was last July. It was a $50 million order. We bought every bag of junk, every single Silver Eagle that we could get our hands on. And that used up $27 million. The remaining $23 million went into numismatic Liberties and St. Gaudens and pretty much cleaned up that market with $23 million. And the markets, the numismatic market and silver, eagles. And of course, that's part of the scarcity on the eagles is because the mint is not minted and shipped like they had 2-3 years ago. So they created a shortage of eagles. The junk, that's not been minted since 1964. And it really crippled that market. Premiums did go higher. I just recently did a fairly good size trade, about $3 million. And we went, it took us 2 days to fill the order and pretty much cleaned up all the junk that we could find at various dealers. Now, can you find, you know, 2 bags, 5 bags, 7 bags? Yeah, you can. But if, you know, if you're looking to do 50 bags or 100 bags or 200 bags, good luck. It's getting really tight.
So when there's a rush to the marketplace, the demand, a shift in sentiment, it won't last very long.
Well, when there's a shift, what you've seen so far is you've seen the thinkers, thoughtful people know something's wrong. Some people don't know exactly what it is. Some know exactly what it is. But you're only talking about 1% of the population, maybe 2% of the population. What happens when 5% or 10% or, you know, you're seeing banks closing like you saw the 4 banks earlier this year? I mean, I was actually had started a vacation that day. And for the next 4 days, I was standing next to a wall outlet with my phone plugged in because I had run out of charge. That's how quickly it happens. And you will see supply get completely eaten up. And at some point in time, you will find wholesalers saying, that's it, we're not selling anymore. The product is mine.
Bill, there was an article that came out very, very recently, last 24 hours. I think it was on Bloomberg. Goldman Sachs said that more institutional money has poured into physical gold this year since 2012. We see what the central banks are doing, especially China, Russia, right. Saudi Arabia, India. Could you elaborate a little bit on that?
Yeah, I mean, that's a fact. The central banks and sovereign treasuries have been buying gold. There's no question about it. And I mean, my question would be, if you know the central banks are doing it, why would you not follow the leader? Because they know exactly what's going on.
Yes.
They're the ultimate insiders.
Right. And Aaron.
All right, Bill. So say someone has done no preparations whatsoever for this Mad Max scenario. What are the 3 most important things that you recommend that person do?
If you've done nothing at all,
right? If you all of a sudden realize, oh, this scenario is coming, I have done nothing, I have no preparations, what are the 3 top most important things that they need to secure?
You need to secure food, you need to secure water, and you need to secure lead, because they're coming for you. So you need to be able to protect yourself. Then from there, you know, you can broaden out. Obviously, from a financial standpoint, you want to get yourself out of the system, get as much capital out of the system and into a position where there's no counterparty risk. And I'm talking about gold and silver. They can't bankrupt because they don't have any liability.
So just kind of coming off of Aaron's question, you list a few things people can do. Now, my question is, we spoke about this yesterday, is what about the people who haven't prepared, like Aaron said, but now they're financially strained? Maybe the spouse lost a job. Maybe right. Both of them lost a job. We know that roughly almost half this country doesn't even have $400 in cash saved up for an emergency. And so we have millions of people now in the U.S. who have absolutely no money. They have a $1,000 car payment.
Yeah.
They have 18 credit cards. They're paying a high rent or a high mortgage. Maybe they're 3 mortgage payments behind. Maybe they're 2 car payments. They're hiding from the repo man, etc. If you're broke right now, is it too late for you? Is there anything you can do at this point if you're in the red?
Well, you obviously want to do your best to skinny down. I mean, if you have 2 cars, give up one.
Mm-hmm.
And as we talked about earlier, I mean, if you have very little money, buy bulk. And when I'm talking about bulk, go out and buy 3, 4, 5 50-pound bags of rice, 50-pound bags of beans. You can live on it. I mean, you're not going to eat well, but you'll survive, and that's what it's all about.
Yeah. And so I would say if you can get a couple side hustles going, do it. You gotta do whatever you gotta do at this point. But there's gonna be, in my opinion, so many people now who are beginning to realize the FOMO's over. A lot of people took the bait, they went out, bought the big screens, they bought the cars, the toys, and now the spouse lost the job, or the wages are getting cut, the hours are getting cut, or the jobs are just disappearing. And so I think we're gonna see a lot of people in big trouble. And again, this is what we're gonna see socially. When people get hungry, like you said, they're coming to your house, because after they've robbed all the malls, the Gucci stores, the Louis Vuitton stores, the Macy's, the drug stores, and they're all closed, then they're coming to your neighborhood more than likely. So be aware of that. Matt.
Okay, I have another shift of gears here to the international scene. We've been hearing a lot lately about the shift from west to east, not only in terms of gold and resources, but power. And recently the BRICS meeting took place, I think last month. Several countries were admitted to the BRICS to be effective, I think, in January, including Saudi Arabia, many other countries. What is your take on that, Bill? What do you think the let's say short-term, medium-term, and long-term effect will be on the U.S. dollar as a result of these BRICS nations getting stronger and more formidable?
Yeah, the BRICS has been in the works for 10 years. There was just a meeting, 2 weeks ago, where 6 nations joined, and then of course the oddness of that was you had Saudi Arabia and Iran at the same time joining. Really, I think the importance is that Saudi Arabia is in the process of joining the BRICS, and they, if you go back in history in 1973, basically created the petrodollar by accepting only dollars. So it gave the U.S. and the U.S. dollar a monopoly and guaranteed demand in order to have, in order to be able to import oil. Now, at this point, Saudi Arabia will accept euros. They will accept yuan. They accept other currencies than just dollars. What that does is it tells these nations that have stockpiled dollars that they don't have to stockpile dollars. And what you're seeing, or what you've been seeing for the last probably year and a half, is nations beginning to leak or dump dollars. And I mean, over the last 2 months, almost 3 months now, we have seen velocity start to turn higher. And that very well may be a sign that foreign nations are dumping dollars, looking at it as a hot potato. So, you know, we'll see whether the velocity continues higher or not. But there's no question about it. The East has been importing gold for many years, since the early 2000s. And they've done that as to try to hedge away from dollar reserves. Look what happened with Russia. They had, $300 billion, $400 billion of reserves basically confiscated, stolen. So if you have reserves in gold and you have the gold, unless you're overrun, you're not going to have your reserves stolen. So it was, you know, obviously been a good move by some of these Eastern countries, stockpiling gold. And the old saying, he who has the gold makes the rules. Gold has moved east from the west, and thus power has moved from the west to the east.
Bill, what do you say to somebody regarding cash? Do we hold cash till it's no longer useful? What kind of allocation should we have with metals versus cash? I mean, we still need cash, correct? How much cash should somebody have? Obviously, yeah, it shouldn't be in the bank. But what are your thoughts on that regarding cash? Should we still be stacking some cash?
Yeah, I've advised people for many, many years now that they should have 6 months cash. And I mean, I think leaving it in the bank, you've really got to do that because you got to pay bills. Mm-hmm. So,
but just enough to pay the bills.
Right. So yeah, what you're doing is you're putting at risk 6 months worth of your bills. When people ask me how much should I put into gold or silver, my answer is whatever you don't want to lose. As far as physical cash, if you're gonna hold cash, you want to hold nothing bigger than $20 bills, because 50s and 100s are gonna be, you know, difficult to deal with. You probably want, I don't know, $5,000, $7,000. And once things go down, you want to spend it as fast as possible. You just want to buy stuff. And I've also mentioned that I think it's a really good idea, if you have debt, to pay 6 months, a year ahead. That way it puts you at the end of the line of foreclosures, repossessions, etc. You may want to do that with your electric company, do that with your water company. If you have the ability to do that, pay your bills forward. It puts you at the end of the line for the people who they're going to chase.
That's a great point, Bill, because if you lose a job tomorrow and you have no money and you got to pay the utility bill, the phone bill, the credit card, you're going to go in panic mode.
Correct.
Now, if I have 6 months of my bills paid in advance, I can sit back and I can breathe a little bit and reevaluate the situation.
Make a good decision.
Give me time to go get a side hustle too, or a job. But you lose a job today and tomorrow the bills are coming due, you're in very, very big trouble.
Exactly.
Aaron.
So I know in the metal space, you know, gold and silver, a lot of people get wrapped around the, you know, the axles about, you know, is silver going to come down, gold going to go up, you know, whatever. So I think they're trying to wait for the best time to buy these metals. And I think there's going to be a point where these metals are no longer available, no matter.
You're correct.
And so I just wanted your opinion on that, if you thought metals were ever going to be a point that they're not available.
Yeah, at some point in time, fiat's going to break down.
Good question.
And confidence will break, and people who own metal will not sell the metal for – they're not going to give you something for nothing. And that's what it amounts to. So, yeah, as far as your question about should I try to time it, trying to time it is, I think, extremely foolish, especially where we are now, because we could go lights out before this thing is posted, and
it's too late. Yeah,
because once they ring the bell, it's game over and metal will go into hiding.
Bill, how fast could the metal get wiped out? Are we talking a month, a day, 72 hours? How fast? I mean, if we saw a billionaire come in and say, I want $500 million of gold today, we started seeing that. How fast, how quickly would these markets be evaporated?
Probably within 24 hours.
Yeah,
would be my guess.
Probably even faster than the grocery stores.
Yeah, like a grocery store with a hurricane coming.
Yeah, yeah. Now, I'm going to ask you another question as we wind down here. The Fed has been – we've had 11 straight rate hikes. We're probably going to get another one in November. We may even get more rate hikes.
We got to get to November.
We got to get to November. And if we get to 2024, we may see more rate hikes. What we know that they're saying, they're going to hold high for longer. It's very possible that we're going to get more hikes in 2024. It's pretty evident we're going to get at least one more this year. Yet, the system, the government, is continuing to spend trillions and trillions of dollars, printing trillions of dollars, spending trillions of dollars. So at one end, you have the Fed raising rates at a record pace. And at the other end of the spectrum, you have the government spending like a drunken sailor. How does this combination play out? Because it seems very counteractive to me that you're raising rates and spending money at the same time. Does not seem very, very productive.
Well, that's a really huge, broad question. I would just say that from the standpoint of raising interest rates, with the amount of debt in the system, with the amount of debt that the Treasury owes, I mean, think about, we're at almost $1 trillion now of interest only that the Treasury has to pay each year. So every time they raise rates, that number goes higher because the interest on the same amount of debt, or as we're seeing, like this year is going to be another $2 trillion as far as the deficit is concerned. So from a mathematical standpoint, we really can't get to the point where the amount of interest that we pay is equal to or greater than tax receipts taken in. Markets will never allow any government, including the U.S., which is the dollar, you know, the reserve currency. No government would ever be allowed to even get close or look like that's going to be the case. And we're getting very close to the point where the world is going to figure out, hey, the U.S., there's no way, it's not even possible to pay the debt back. So that's, you know, that's a danger. And with raising interest rates, if you go back to 1982, that was the peak in rates, and rates bottomed in what, 85, 86, rates went higher into 87, caused the 87 crash. Rates were lowered again. They were raised into 1993. And then you saw the sovereign debt crisis. You saw the same thing in 98. You saw the same thing with the dot-com bubble. You saw it again in 2007, 2008, 2009. Each time when they raised rates, they broke something. And each time they broke something at a lower high rate compared to the previous cycle. This cycle, we've already gone through the highs that we were back at in 2018, 2019. The only thing that saved the markets back then, literally, was COVID, because it allowed central banks to just flood trillions upon trillions all over the world. So they got one last reflation. So we had one last reflation, and this is the spike that's going to blow up the entire balloon.
So will the Fed reverse course at some point? Will we see the helicopter money come back? Will they be forced to do that? Or is Jerome Powell and the Fed going to keep going?
Well, they're going to be forced. I mean, they will be, the markets will collapse, and it will force a closure of everything. Now, does the Fed really step in and lower rates? Do they try to fix it? Or is blowing the system part of the plan?
Is that
the plan?
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know.
Well, you know, my question too is, Bill, that, you know, we keep hearing every day the hope on these channels, these financial channels, the markets are, you know, relying on hope, the hopium, the Fed's going to reverse, the Fed's going to stop. So if the Fed does reverse course and lower interest rates, and we continue printing money, isn't that what got us where we're at right now? So they're saying that the solution is actually what got us here.
Well,
low rates and money printing.
It's been that way.
So if they do reverse course and the helicopter money comes back and they slam rates and they're printing all this money, what now are the odds of seeing hyperinflation in America? Is that going to be the end of the dollar?
100%. I mean, the odds of hyperinflation at this point are basically 100%. And the odds of seeing massive deflation, 100%. And the reason I can say this is because all you need to do is look at the amount of debt that's already in the system. This is not predicated on something else happening.
Mm-hmm.
The debt is already in place. The debt is not serviceable. The only way to service it is to create more currency on a mass scale. So you're talking about hyperinflation there, and we also know from a saturation level, these corporations, these real estate can't take more debt on because the cash flows are not there to service them.
Bill, there is, as you know, $334 trillion of global debt. We're going to see a global depression, in my opinion. opinion.
And there's over 2 quadrillion of derivatives.
2 quadrillion of derivatives. My question is, everybody's going to feel pain throughout the world. I believe, I could be wrong here, love to know your opinion. I think America is going to feel probably a lot more pain than many places in the world.
Correct.
And we're not ready for it. We're not used to it. We're not prepared. We're very, unfortunately, lazy, slow, mentally weak country now, very
yes.
dependent on pharmaceuticals. We need to be told what to do. And we're not prepared like our parents or grandparents that went through the Great Depression.
It was a different world.
It was a different world. And we're entering a very new world right now. And I will let you close with your final thoughts on that and anything that you want to promote, anything you want to talk about. And if anybody wants to contact you, let them know how they can do that.
Sure. Yeah, that's actually a good point. If you go back to the 1920s, 1930s, the United States and the world, it was still fairly agrarian society. People were self-sufficient. Neighbors helped neighbors. The world we live in today, I mean, people do their fishing at the grocery store. People do their hunting at the grocery store. Those arts are gone. People don't know how to survive. I mean, if the grocery store, if restaurants and grocery stores close down, some people don't even know how to cook. It's that bad. The other thing is, neighbors were always helpful to other neighbors back in the 30s. There was a true respect in society. There's no respect today. If somebody falls down, what do you see them doing in a big city?
Film it.
Yeah, they film it. They film the people taking their wallet and their shoes and
yeah.
and rings and necklaces. I mean, that's the society we're in today. So it is a total
breakdown.
It's a different breakdown. It's a different mindset.
Yeah.
And you're absolutely right from the standpoint of, if you want to call it a mind weakness or laziness or what have you, the grit that was in this country and worldwide during World War II and after World War II, I mean, the grit of that time is no longer. And I mean, it's our fault. It happened on our watch,
yeah.
Unfortunately. And it's a function of every parent wants their child to have an easier life. Well, now we're to the point where, I mean, you got kids that are playing video games 18 hours a day,
Zombified to their phones.
Yeah, exactly.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, and also don't think that part was not a plan.
Right.
I mean,
right.
Think about it. Everybody's got a phone.
Yep.
Almost everybody's got a smartphone.
The smartest man in the room.
No, everybody has a smartphone. You're tracked. Yep. I mean, you could be talking about billiards, whatever. And all of a sudden, boom, on your phone
right.
comes up an ad.
Right.
Or even on your computer comes up an ad. So you're being tracked where you are. They're listening to what you're talking about. It distracts people. It distracts them from the standpoint of, how many times have you seen people walking down the street looking at their phone?
Oh, they
like
walk
this,
right off a cliff.
And they
which has happened.
Hit a telephone
yeah.
pole.
Yeah, right, right.
So,
right.
yeah, I mean, it's... A lot of what's happening has to be a plan. And I mean, I said this back in 2007 when I first started writing, is that the policies that they were putting into place were too stupid. They were just too stupid to be mistakes. It had to be a plan.
Right.
It had to be,
right.
It could not be a mistake.
Right.
So that
Bill,
said,
before we close and you give your information, let's talk
yeah.
about Reba.
Ziva.
Ziva. Tara. Been here. We've seen her for a couple days.
That?
A Dutch Shepherd. She's how old now?
20 months.
20 months. And I think having a dog is an incredible asset. Little dog, big dog. If you have the means to get a beautiful import, like a Dutch Shepherd or a Malinois, maybe a good German Shepherd, a well-trained, maybe KMPP dog, you have the means. They're not cheap by any stretch of the imagination. But somebody who's had experience for a few years with these dogs and had a couple of these dogs myself, they're wonderful assets because a dog like this can hear 100 times better than you. It can smell 100 times better than you. They will alert you. They're incredible alarm systems. They're incredible defensive tools. They're incredible companions and family members. And I highly, highly advise, if you have the means and the lifestyle to have a dog or two like this, which I'm going to be going back when I move, I'm going to make sure I have two good dogs. You know, I have a little Nudge right now, but you know, she's not built for this. But if you have the means, incredible. And just a beautiful Dutch Shepherd right here. Just absolutely stunning. And your thoughts really quick before we close and get your last words. Why do you have a dog like this? And you have a Malinois coming too.
Right.
So you love these dogs as much as I do. And you pay a lot of money for them. Why is that?
Well, I am an animal lover. I mean, I'm good with pretty much all animals. But why would, if you could afford a 24/7 bodyguard, why would you not have
one? And you go everywhere with this dog.
Right. I go absolutely everywhere. Yeah. As long as they're a registered service dog, you can take them anywhere you go except for a food production facility. You can go restaurants.
We had dinner with her tonight.
Right. I mean, if I get on an airplane to go somewhere, I can't carry a pistol.
Mm-hmm.
I can carry her. She's right. A loaded pistol that right. will go off before I can right. pull the trigger.
In fact, I mean, sometimes even more intimidating because people know that
people give you space.
Right. Right.
And it's just normal.
Right. People a lot of times know that if you drop that leash and that dog means business, there's no going back. So
why you should have
two.
Two.
Yes.
One is none. Two are one, and three are unstoppable.
Huge deterrent.
Right.
Great for the property. Great for the house. Great for the family. Bill, as we close, anything you want to promote, and give us the contact number or information sure. if somebody wants to get a hold of you.
Sure. First, before I do that, I just want to say, do your best. Don't beat yourself up if you forgot something. All you can ever do is the best you can do. I mean, don't. If you're lazy, then that's your fault.
Yeah.
But just do the best you can do with what is coming is going to be very, very severe. So
doing nothing is a terrible strategy.
Sticking your head in the sand, yeah. you're going to get your ass blown off.
Yeah.
Simple.
Yep.
You can reach me. You can go to my website, see my work. It's billholter.com. There is a icon to click on to contact me, or you can contact me directly through my business email. It's bholter@hotmail.com.
Bill, it was a pleasure spending a couple days with you.
Take two.
Having you over at the house, having dinner. Ziva, I know Matt enjoyed it. Aaron enjoyed it. And when we get back, we look forward to seeing you again. But everything you said tonight, I believe 110%. I hope people are listening. You know, if anything, please just listen to some of this and think for yourselves. And I think what Bill's saying is be the most self-sufficient, independent human being you can be. And as I leave you today, walk close to God, because that is the number one asset above all of it. Walk close to God. It costs absolutely no money. And we're gonna be heading into a very deep spiritual war here that's already begun. So be walking close to God. God bless every one of you. Please make sure to like, subscribe, share. And as always, I look forward to speaking with each and every one of you. God bless.